This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The previous summit clearly overpromised what Russia might do for Africa. Vladimir Putin said they're going to increase Russia-Africa trade, and of course that hasn't happened.
That was Brooks Spector, former U.S. diplomat to several African countries, on the sharp decline of African leaders attending the Russia-Africa summit. Details coming up. Also, ECOWAS says intervention is possible in Niger. And tensions are high in Senegal as opposition politician Ousmane Sonko vows hunger strike. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The West African Regional Bloc, ECOWAS, has given Niger's coup leaders 1 week to return the country to normal or face possible military intervention. The deadline comes after Niger's democratically elected president was toppled by members of his presidential guard last week. But as VOA's Nairobi bureau chief Mariama Diallo reports, there are no easy options, and the few that are available come with their own regional consequences.
Meeting Sunday in an emergency session, members of ECOWAS, led by Nigeria's President Bola Tinubu, gave Niger's junta leaders a week to release and reinstate President Mohamed Bazoum. The group says all measures, including the use of force, are on the table to restore constitutional order. Michael Shurkin is a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and also the director of global programs at 14 North Strategies, an Africa-focused business advisory group. He says he applauds ECOWAS' determination, but wonders how effective a regional military intervention will be.
That kind of thing makes me cringe, just because even if it is possible, it's so easy to imagine really bad things happening as a result, and it's hard to know how that would be a valuable thing.
ECOWAS also imposed sanctions, including the suspension of all commercial and financial transactions between Niger and other ECOWAS member states. Shurkin says sanctions in this case might not be effective, especially for a country as poor as Niger.
They were ECOWAS sanctions against Mali, which proved to be completely useless. In fact, they were counterproductive because the Malian junta was able to use the so-called international campaign against Malian sovereignty to its advantage to try to rally people behind it. And it helped a very illegitimate regime create for itself more legitimacy. And if anything, all the sanctions did is just hurt poor people.
Last week, Bazoum's supporters protested in the capital, Niamey, calling for his release. On Sunday, pro-coup residents attacked the French embassy as they held their own demonstration. Dr. Edgar Githua, an international relations and diplomacy expert teaching at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, told VOA that ECOWAS, in conjunction with the United States, France, and the European Union, has a strategic imperative for restoring Bazoum to power.
For the simple reason, geopolitically speaking, the U.S. does not want Russia to come into that region. If Bazoum is kicked out of power, the military junta that takes over will open wide arms. The Wagner Group, remember, the Wagner Group is still in Chad, is still in Libya. They're around there. Trust me, they will sweep in so fast. So the U.S. geopolitically knows if there's a power vacuum, Russia will move in to fill that power vacuum.
France, the United States, and other countries have troops in Niger. And while some of these countries have the ability to do some targeted intervention, Shurkin doesn't think any of these governments would have an appetite in doing so. Because
it looks terrible. It seems to reinforce everything that many people fear and say about the French role in the Sahel, because here's France being a neocolonial power, picking and choosing leaders and not letting Nigerian themselves sort things out. Same thing if the U.S. did it. It's very problematic.
Niger has been a key ally of the West in the fight against militant groups such as Islamic State and Al-Qaeda in the Sahel region, which has seen a number of coups in the past few years, including in neighboring Burkina Faso and Mali. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Mm-hmm. The Russia-Africa summit ended in St. Petersburg this weekend with clear indications that the continent is growing increasingly impatient with Moscow's ongoing war in Ukraine. African leaders also failed to persuade President Vladimir Putin to resume Black Sea Grain Initiative, which allowed grain to leave Ukrainian ports. Putin's termination of the agreement has caused grain prices to rise amid fears it will cause global food shortages, including in Africa. Darren Taylor reports.
43 of 54 African heads of state attended the last Russia-Africa summit in 2019. Only 17 arrived in St. Petersburg. The Kremlin blamed what it called outrageous pressure from the West for the drop. But former United States diplomat to several African countries, Brooks Spector, says it signifies that Africa's disenchanted with Russia.
The previous summit clearly overpromised what Russia might do for Africa. Vladimir Putin said they're going to increase Russia-Africa trade, and of course that hasn't happened, and the total trade has actually dropped for what it was. Besides the overpromising, was a degree of dissatisfaction with the Russian cancellation of the Black Sea Grain Initiative, but the larger course of the war itself.
African leaders who attended, such as South Africa's Cyril Ramaphosa, a Putin ally, forcefully called on Russia to re-implement the grain agreement. But Putin promised only to send some grain for free to six African countries, mostly his allies and where Russian mercenaries are present. African leaders again pressed for a peaceful end to the Ukraine war. Putin responded by saying he'd consider an African peace proposal, but added Russia couldn't cease fire while being attacked. South African conflict resolution expert Dr. Kingsley Makubela doesn't believe Putin's taking the African plan seriously.
I think it's still naive of the African Union, and South Africa in particular, to think that we can mediate that conflict when the powers behind this conflict that are already supporting this conflict are not buying into this settlement of the conflict peacefully.
For Makubela, the summit was mainly about Russia trying to position itself as a leader of a multipolar world, a new world order, and promising that Africa would be a major beneficiary of an anti-West political and economic alliance.
The Russians, they are using their own soft power influence to try to woo the Africans. But all these things are happening at a time when the world is changing. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization is taking a center stage as a platform for global development and so on. And the West is quite worried. The Americans are quite worried about losing their own power.
But Spector points out the US remains much more influential in Africa at the moment than Russia, particularly on the trade front. And the US continues to forge strong military alliances with African partners. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
In Senegal, main opposition leader Ousmane Sonko has embarked on a hunger strike following his arrest last Friday. Local media say tensions are high after the police stopped his supporters from protesting in parts of the capital Dakar on Monday. For the latest developments, VOA's Peter Cloti reached reporter Alpha Diallo in the Senegalese capital, Dakar.
His lawyers yesterday, they were on TV and said that Mr. Sonko will start a hunger strike today. You know, today he has been arraigned before a special court to answer for the 7 charges leveled against him.
Did the authorities say if they will grant him bail?
No, not at all. Because even when his lawyers came out yesterday and the day he was arrested on Friday and on Saturday, the prosecutor general held a press conference in which, you know, he just, mentioned the charges they are going to level against Mr. Ousmane Sonko. And even the prosecutor general went to say that if these charges are confirmed, then maybe Mr. Sonko will be remanded in prison. So there is no likely, even his lawyer said that the charges are so heavy, So they doubt whether Mr. Sonko can just, be given a bill.
Is that why he embarked on the hunger strike?
Yes, certainly that is the reason. And in fact, during the weekend when his force audition, when he was forced arraigned at the special police section, the police intervention, that day he refused to answer even the question, so he didn't say anything according to his lawyers. And maybe this is the reason why he is still observing hunger strike. But then in meantime, Dakar is on high alert. Security forces are seen everywhere. They are, you see them, clad in their patterns, tear gas. So they are, well prepared for any eventuality, during Mr. Sonko's, questioning today, and what is going to come out of that, questioning with the special judge.
We heard reports that some of his supporters attempted to protest and that the police were trying to stop it. What is going on the ground at the moment about it?
That's very correct, Douglas, because even this morning, so many people, it's the beginning of the week, so many people supposed to go to work, but because of the tension in the early hours of the morning, even the main highway, the tollway, where people were demonstrating, they held some demonstration in the early hours, preventing many motorists, from passing. And this, led to many people returning to go back to their houses. But as I was coming, because I'm still in the middle of, in the center of town, I have heard reports that the police have quelled all those demonstrations. So as we speak, there's high alert. People are all, some shops, many shops and even many business centers have not opened. And even some banks, some of those banks that are, in the outskirts of the capital, they all remain closed. So people knew that, or people are expecting that maybe whatever happened from the questioning of Mr. Sonko, there might be some troubles.
So tensions are still very high. What time are they going to question him?
Well, the questioning of Mr. Sonko, the auditioning started at 11. So, in Senegal's judicial system, this could, go up to, late into the night. So nobody can tell you exactly when they are going to finish the questioning. And it depends whether Mr. Sonko is also going to answer to the question, to the charges leveled against him. Because the charges are so big, they are even talking of, you're calling for instructions. And, organizing a group of, individuals to carry mayhem in the society. And they even mention of something like, association of, terrorist organizations. So these charges are so closer. So we don't know actually what is going to happen at the end of the day.
That was Alpha Diallo in Senegal talking to VOA's Peter Cloti. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. English to Africa will be celebrating its 60th anniversary soon in light of our 60th anniversary coming up. A listener had this to say.
This is James Roy Majok from Mayom County in Unity State, Bentiu Town, South Sudan. Hi, VOA Africa. I'm really excited to share my happiness with you, and especially with the VOA journalists who are working tirelessly, days and nights, disseminating accurate information to worldwide audiences. I've been a VOA Africa listener since 1996. During that time, we South Sudanese people are struggling for our independence from Sudan. There's one thing that led me to listen to VOA Africa Radio every year. The VOA news interviews like with our late leader, Dr. John Garang de Mazio, about how South Sudanese will achieve this goal of independence. And it comes to reality, we got our independence from the Sudan government through Western country support. My special thanks goes to VOA journalists Peter Coletti, James Buddy, Nabil Bayajo, John Tanza, plus other journalists I didn't mention.
A group of Sudanese rights and professional bodies have accused both warring parties in Sudan of committing atrocities that could be prosecuted as war crimes and violations against humanity. In a petition addressed to United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, the coalition called for an investigation by the International Criminal Court. Michael Atit reports from Juba, South Sudan.
More than 30 Sudanese rights groups and professional entities accuse both the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces of carrying out human rights violations against civilians in Sudan's Darfur region and elsewhere. In a joint statement issued Saturday, the rights groups demanded an immediate investigation into the alleged violations and for the referral of the matter to the International Criminal Court through the United Nations Security Council. Speaking to VOA, Nafisa Hajar, the deputy head of the Darfur Bar Association, says they have documented a series of violations and attacks, including mass killings, ethnic cleansing, and forceful displacement, which she says would amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. She says, given that the judicial system of Sudan is now paralyzed due to the ongoing war, the international community should take action to bring the perpetrators to a court of law. Hajar says, right now, there are continued airstrikes on civilian buildings. Civilians are forcefully displaced from their homes. Women are being systematically raped. Therefore, she says, we believe that all these atrocities should be counted as war crimes. On July 13, the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, Karim Khan, announced the opening of a new investigation regarding allegations of war crimes in the context of war in Sudan, especially in the city of Al Janina in West Darfur State. Hajar says the motive behind their petition is to help the victims and to prevent the continued impunity of the alleged perpetrators. She says both the army and their RSF deserve to be investigated. Hajar says at the moment, there are serious violations of all treaties and agreements that call for protection of civilians. She says the rights of Sudanese civilians are now being violated by both warring parties. Sudanese lawyer Abdulbasit Al-Haj criticized the Sudan Armed Forces for failing to protect civilians in Al Janina during RSF attacks in the city and elsewhere in Sudan. Speaking to VOA, Al-Haj says the RSF has been attacking hospitals, occupying them, targeting doctors in Khartoum, and committing genocide and ethnic cleansing of non-Arab groups, especially the Masalit ethnic group in West Darfur State.
They occupy civilian houses, they occupy hospitals and schools and universities and destroyed all those buildings, which is according to the definition of war crime, those are war crime or crime against humanity.
Sudan Army spokesperson Nabil Abdullah distanced the military from these atrocities, saying all were committed by the RSF. They took over the homes of citizens in Khartoum by force and turned them into military barracks, Nabil told VOA. VOA reached out to the RSF commander's special advisor for foreign affairs, Ibrahim Mukhayer, for a comment, but he did not reply. War broke out between the army and the Rapid Support Forces on April 15th. The conflict has since forced some 3.5 million people to flee their homes, including 844,000 who have gone to neighboring countries in search of safety, according to the United Nations. Michael Atit for VOA News, Juba, South Sudan.
A cybersecurity company says six African countries, including war-torn Sudan, enforced internet limits within their territory during the first half of 2023. Netherlands-based Surfshark says that's twice as many nations as during the same months of 2022. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
In the first half of 2023, the cybersecurity organization Surfshark recorded 42 new internet disruptions worldwide, 9 of which occurred in Africa. six countries, Ethiopia, Guinea, Mauritania, Senegal, Sudan, and Tanzania, accounts for 9 internet shutdowns. Egna Grises is a representative of Surfshark.
We can see that this is twice as many countries as we had in the first half of 2022, unfortunately, because in 2022 there were 3 countries in Africa that imposed new restrictions. This year we have 6. So yeah, we have the recorded 9 restrictions, and each of the 6 countries either had 1 or 2 different restrictions.
Ethiopia, which has imposed internet shutdowns because of ethnic unrest in the country, recently lifted its restrictions. Restrictions remain in place in Sudan and are made worse by damage from the ongoing war, which has damaged infrastructure and cut off electricity in many areas. Tariq Ahmed left Sudan 3 weeks ago and expressed the challenges he faced in communicating with his humanitarian colleagues in the western part of the country.
I was trying to talk with my colleagues and staff in South Darfur and West Darfur states, and I couldn't reach them, and either by call or internet or WhatsApp messages. So to know how they are and how their families are doing during this difficult time, and also see the possibility of evacuating them to a safe place. So I just couldn't reach them until one of them managed to cross the border into Chad, and then he called me by a Chadian number on WhatsApp to tell me how it is, and they have reached there safely.
Grises says authorities in Africa usually shut down the internet in response to protests, conflict and political crisis.
When the public is protesting and is unhappy with the government, social media and the internet is a really great way to organize gatherings and to try to gather more and more people to make their stance and to protest. And obviously the government doesn't always support such demonstrations. And by shutting down the internet or restricting the internet, the government can kind of make it more difficult for the public to organize these demonstrations.
Grises knows the restriction not only prevent people from protesting, but also stop them from spreading word of any protest to the rest of the world. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Batty, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, Jumbe Hamza, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.